content of this program is intended for a blind and impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine, October 2018 edition. On the cover of this particular edition is Khalees, and we went over her story last week where she talked about she's been in the news lately, particularly with the drama that's going on between her and her ex-husband, which is Nas, which is a rapper. And then we also went over building wealth for your family and some of the trending topics. So now we're going to go over Aretha. And this was written by Susan L. Taylor. It's the Queen of Soul has left the stage, but her legend lives on in the soaring music that spoke to our trials, our triumphs, our joy. From March 25th, 1942 is when she was born. Again, that's March 25th, 1942, and she died on August the 16th, 2018. It was her kindness as much as her music that won my heart. These many decades later, my daughter Shayna remembers her sweet spirit. We were at the sprawling home of Aretha Franklin and her then husband Glenn Turman to shoot a Essence cover. Over a delicious meal her chef had prepared for the team. Aretha settled in comfortably next to my Shayna, who was still in grade school. She wanted to know about my baby's schoolwork, her life growing up in New York City, her thoughts. Miss Aretha was so nice to me, Mommy, Shayna would say. Now the mother of a 20-year-old, my daughter holds that memory close to this day. Soft, gentle, and surprisingly shy, Aretha Louise Franklin also seemed to host a sadness, a melancholy. Get beyond the thrill of being with the legend to just being with the woman. You could sense a sorrow, see it in her eyes. I wondered about the source. I know that losing her mother hurts, even if we are fully grown. It leaves an empty place in our lives, a hole that the passage of the time doesn't fill. It's believed that it was her husband's infidelity that chased Barbara Sigrist Franklin away. Rather than struggling to raise her children solo, Barbara left her four kids with her prosperous father, or with their prosperous father, a renowned pastor in Detroit, but they visited with her frequently. Perhaps the greatest loss came when Aretha was 10. That was the year Barbara died from a heart attack out of season at the age of 34. From then on, Aretha was forced to become mother to herself, to counsel and console the child and the woman who would grow to be. Aretha dug deep within herself and the culture of the Black church to find that counsel. In those arms, she rocked herself into some sense of surety that everything was going to be all right. That sound, that song, that soul, so instantly, unmistakably identifiable as Aretha's, was lifted to a triumphant shout from a 10-year-old's lullaby. It's the pain and the triumph that resonate. The Aretha who spoke was not the Aretha who sang. When she spoke, her tone was so mellow and she gave no hint of the vocal power held in reserve. She rarely raised her speaking voice or offered up more than was necessary in conversation. But when she sang, her intention was that the whole world would hear her. And it did. She sang from a deep, place within that few of us have the courage to enter. That's what moved us. It moved my Caribbean mother, born soon after the turn of the 20th century. It moved me, my daughter, and my granddaughter, who was born at the beginning of this century, four generations, a century of women touched deeply by Aretha's truth. You make me feel. Pain is universal, but so is the joy and gratitude that came at dawn, just after our darkest hour. People often focus on Aretha's heartbreaks in relationships, but who hasn't had breakups and breakdowns? Who hasn't been betrayed or left hurt? Aretha brought it all to song, and with it, she brought strength and power. She was a leader, but leadership can be a lonesome journey for women soloists, as it proved to be for Ma Rainey, Bessie Smith, Billy, Ella, Sarah, Dinah, Nina. A woman boss of the boys in the band holds mighty challenges. And historically, the music industry hasn't shown much respect for women. Aretha demanded respect and spelled it out for any who might be in doubt about just what that meant. Respect became an anthem. When Aretha started wearing African prints and head wraps and abandoned her curl, or her pressing curl, for an afro, she helped spark a new racial pride in black women, calling us to embrace our natural hair despite the arbitration of the mainstream. Truth be told, many African Americans disparaged natural hair as well. But Aretha didn't let that stop her, and because it didn't, she helped inspire the awakening of black pride and power and identification with our African roots. But what is not acknowledged nearly enough, except perhaps by Michael Eric Dyson, is that Aretha was incredibly intelligent, a well-read, informed, and deeply thoughtful person. I recall the moment when my husband, Kefra, and I introduced Michael and Aretha. It was about 20 years ago at the Essence Music Festival that we knocked on her dressing room door. "Hello, Miss Taylor," she teased. "And Dr. Dyson, I just finished reading your new book." Michael, who, like Aretha, grew up in Detroit, was just at the start of his brilliant career and not nearly well known then. He was stunned. We all were. Aretha missed nothing about how to get us closer to freedom. Aretha Franklin was her own person, and nowhere was that more evident than in her stance for civil rights. She was in the vanguard of the fight for justice for black people. A vocal supporter of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. before it was popular to be. She also stood with the Black Power movement. She offered to pay the bail for Angela Davis, who was on the FBI's 10 most wanted list in 1970, charged for her alleged role in an attempt to help the activist Soledad brothers escape from prison. "My daddy says I don't know what I'm doing," said Aretha at the time. "Well, I respect him, of course, but I'm going to stick by my beliefs." Nothing, not her father's wishes, not social racism, not possible career derailment, would cause her to waver her commitment to our struggle for human rights and dignity. We long celebrate the courage and beauty of this royal representative of black womanhood. Not only did Aretha Franklin have one of the greatest voices we've ever heard, but she also was a quietly effective warrior on behalf of all of us. Though the Queen of Soul has waved farewell, may we cherish, honor, and be guided by her fighting spirit in these times. And always, our children, our community need it now. And it also has some of the different quotes here, and I'll provide you with some of the quotes that Essence listed from some of the other stars in reference to Aretha Franklin. Quote, "The ultimate singer, the greatest singer and musician of my lifetime. The power of your voice in music and in civil rights blew open the door for me and so many others. You were my inspiration, my mentor, and my friend," end quote. Mariah Carey. She was so, quote, "She was gracious. When we were married, we each came with a package. I had 3 children, and she really became a mother figure to them and allowed them to be themselves in her home," end quote. Glenn Turman. Quote, she was an integral part of many people's lives, and although I never met her in person, I feel as if I did. Her music was and continues to be so much a part of my own individual life. She's a part of my history, and not just because she made a public statement indicating that she would pay my bill back in 1970. End quote. Angela Davis. Quote, Aretha's voice was so big and broad, like the sky, it was strong, but at the same time, angelic. I heard God in her voice. All of her songs told a story that touched a special place inside each one of us, end quote. Roberta Flack. And last quote is, quote, what I enjoyed most was the friendship. It was so freely given, and she felt so safe. I think that probably the thing that she craved the most in this life, other than to make more music, was to be loved for herself. And I think we all search for that. End quote. Peebo Bryson. And that was a well-written article. On to our next article, titled An Immigration Nightmare. A disastrous policies unfold under the Trump administration. Black immigrants continue to fight for their day in court. Dania Joseph was 7 years old when she said goodbye to her parents, siblings, and homeland of Belize, bound for the United States of America. The little girl with copper skin and dark, soulful eyes carried her few possessions. Accompanied by an aunt during the 2002 journey from Central America, she settled in with her grandmother in California and embarked on a new life. Yet there was a secret, one that involved her immigration status. For 16 years, I've called America home, says Joseph, now 24 and a graduate of UCLA. It's where I grew up, shared classrooms with American children, and gave back through civic engagement, advocacy, and organizing. The only thing I lack is a piece of paper that would allow me to contribute and live according to my full potential. Joseph is among some 700,000 dreamers who are beneficiaries of deferred action for childhood arrival programs, or DACA, in the United States. They are called dreamers based on the Dream Act, a proposal first introduced in Congress in 2001 to offer legal status to the undocumented who were brought to the U.S. as children, and the requirement that they attend college, work, or join the military. They repeated defeat of the Dream Act in Congress prompted President Barack Obama to enact DACA through an executive order in June of 2012. DACA enables undocumented immigrants in good legal standing who arrived in America before their 16th birthday to receive work permits and exemption from deportation for 2 years. The time period is renewable so long as the individual's conduct remains exemplary. For DACA recipients whose average age is 24 years old, the program began to unravel when President Trump, then a candidate for president, or Donald Trump, then a candidate for president, vowed to reverse the executive order. Then in 2017, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced the program would be phased out. Civil liberties organizations such as the National Immigration Law Center, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and the ACLU challenged the proposed shutdown of DACA in court, even as Texas and at least 9 other states sued to halt the program. Round one went to the Dreamers. In 2018, a federal judge in Washington, D.C. overturned the decision to end DACA, saying the government's case was inadequately explained. For the sake of the young people impacted by this program who productively contribute to our country, we hope that the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit will affirm the district court's ruling in this case, says Kala D. Crane, the NAACP's assistant general counsel. But Attorney General Sessions derided the ruling, and the Trump administration is now weighing in appeal. Repealing DACA is just one of a series of immigration policies under Trump's presidency that have sparked fear and outrage. Others include a ban on travel from several Muslim majority countries and a zero tolerance ruling that resulted in some 2,300 children being forcibly separated from parents seeking asylum at the southern U.S. border. The children, some still in diapers, were detained in wire-linked cages inside warehouses, in tents hastily erected on military bases or at private agencies as far as New York City and Seattle. Black mothers from Honduras and the Democratic Republic of Congo were among those who recounted the agony of seeing their children snatched away. The vehement public outcry led the president to sign Executive Order 13841 to end the separation policy in June. It's about keeping families together while at the same time being sure that we have a very powerful, very strong border, Trump said in the House in a White House statement. But when a judge ordered the families to be reunited, it quickly became clear that the customs officials had no records or systems in place to match the children with their parents, many of whom had already been deported without their offspring. The ACLU and immigrant advocacy groups, including UNDOCU Black Network, African Communities Together, Haitian Bridge Alliance Incorporated, United We Dream, and the Black Immigrant Collective, as well as several civil rights and faith leaders, tried to stand in the gap. Across the country, appalled citizens rallied, marched, and organized to help in whatever way they could. Representative Maxine Waters urged folks to call out Trump administration officials, while Congolese immigrant Therese Patricia Okuma scaled the Statue of Liberty on July 4th in protest. As a daughter of Nigerian immigrants and someone who's worked in immigrant communities for much than a decade, I've never been more concerned about the safety and dignity of our communities, says Opal Tomati, a co-founder of Black Lives Matter and now executive director of the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, noting that the commander-in-chief had referred to Haiti and African nations as blank holes or bleep holes countries. She adds, this administration has no respect for our humanity. Former U.S. Ambassador to Senegal, Harriet L. Elam Thomas, agrees. Having spent 42 years in the State Department's Foreign Service with postings around the globe, she described the treatment of families seeking asylum under Trump as inhumane. My heart is heavy, my soul is troubled, and my faith in my country is being tested each and every day, she says. Where is our conscience? Where is our sense of justice? Where are our morals? Where are we? As the country grapples with immigration issues on multiple fronts, the Congressional Black Caucus and African American women lawmakers are pushing to ensure that the interests of Black immigrants are not ignored. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee has made several trips to the southern border to investigate the living conditions of warehoused children. Together with colleagues in the House of Representatives, she co-sponsored the Keep Families Together Act, aimed at prohibiting the federal government from separating kids from their parents except in extraordinary circumstances. Equitable and just treatment for all people in a pillar of American democracy, she asserts. And it is a tenet that we need to strive to uphold every recourse we possess. Senator Kamala Harris, Democrat for California, the daughter of Indian and Jamaican immigrants, has also been outspoken about current immigration policies. She and other Democrats personally met with dreamers like Dania Joseph, inviting Joseph to attend last January's State of the Union address. And after touring a detention facility, Harris introduced legislation that includes the DUN, also known as Detention Oversight, Not Expansion Act, to stop the expansion of immigration and customs enforcement detention spaces and ensure better oversight of conditions in existing centers. She also initiated the Reunite Every Unaccompanied Newborn Infant, Toddler and Other Children, Reunite Act to guarantee that hundreds of broken families can ultimately be reunified. Government should be in the business of keeping families together, not tearing them apart, Harris notes. In support of such actions, Congresswoman Yvette Clark, Democrat for New York, co-chairs the Congressional Black Caucus Task Force on Immigration and has introduced more than a dozen immigration bills. She is joined in her efforts by Congresswoman Karen Bass, Democrat from California, the ranking member of the House Subcommittee on Africa. When we look at immigration, it's usually through a lens of the newly arrived Latino population, says Clark, whose parents came from Jamaica. But there is a much more expansive group of individuals within our borders who are relatively new as well. There are a huge population of African descent coming from throughout the diaspora, whether it's continental Africa, South and Central Africa, or the Caribbean. To be clear, the Migration Policy Institute reports that the bulk of Americans, nearly 44 million immigrants, are in the country legally. Still, there are an estimated 11.5 million undocumented immigrants here, with more than 575,000 blacks among that number, according to the state Black Immigrants, a 2016 report from the New York University School of Law Immigrant Rights Clinic and the Black Alliance for Just Immigration. Nalima Stiti Munin, age 43, a Kenyan immigrant advocate in Minnesota, points out that Black people who move to the states face unique challenges. They're more often racially profiled, and if undocumented, are subject to longer detention and increased deportation. Women, being the main caretakers in our communities, are shouldering an unprecedented burden, observes the wife and mother of three. Fortunately, public opinion is evolving in part because of the troubling fallout of recent policies. A June 2018 survey by the Pew Research Center found that 74% of Americans favor granting legal status to immigrants who entered illegally as children, while 60% oppose the wall Trump wants to build along the U.S.-Mexican border, which has claimed with help eradicate criminal elements, drugs, and terrorism. The survey also revealed that a majority of Americans are unaware that most immigrants in the U.S. are here illegally. Even so, most poll respondents did not believe that undocumented people take jobs that citizens want or that they are more likely to commit serious crimes. Even some conservatives are trying to rebalance the scales of fairness when it comes to immigrant rights. Mia Love, Republican from Utah, the first Black Republican woman elected to Congress, is a daughter of Haitian immigrants. This year, she co-sponsored the Uniting and Securing America Act, which would provide protections for DACA recipients. She also worked on another key matter, temporary protected status, to allow foreign nationals from countries like Haiti and Somalia, which are experiencing armed conflict, natural disaster, or other extraordinary circumstances, to stay in the U.S. if conditions back home prevent their safe return. When asked about whether she believes immigration was being handled well by her own GOP party or Democrats, Love says she hopes for more balance and less demonizing. Generally, I don't think any collective political organizations are handling immigration particularly well, she says. Americans are presented with too many false choices, and immigration is too often used as a wedge issue. On this point, Representative Bass of California concurs. Trump is trying to pit us against each other, she observes, adding that it's critical that African Americans show solidarity with immigrants, especially those who are black. She points out that Trump's pledge to end the immigration visa lottery, which he said randomly hands out green cards to the underserving, and so-called chain migration, whereby an immigrant can co-sponsor or can sponsor an unlimited number of relatives, are really ploys to limit the number of black immigrants. The primary way that blacks come here and through diversity, visas, and family reunification, Bass says. So Trump proposed giving DACA representatives legal status on the condition that we get rid of these programs. Even the DACA kids objected. They said, no, we don't want that because you're saying that I can stay, but my aunt can't come, explains Bass. Instead, she and others favor a Clean Dream Act that will provide a pathway to citizenship for some 2.1 million undocumented youngsters. Immigrant youth should not be used as bargaining chips, says Patrice Lawrence, the National Policy and Advocacy Director of the UndocU Black Network. Meanwhile, Danaya Joseph anxiously awaits each new development in the political arena and each new ruling in the courts. Sharing her aspiration to one day become a human rights attorney and an American citizen, she explains, my dream of citizenship fuels me to continue the fight for equity across the United States of America. And so she keeps on advocating for all immigrants, including those from the diaspora like herself. After all, they don't call them dreamers for nothing. So some of the fast facts about Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which is also known as DACA or DACA. President Barack Obama created DACA on June the 15th, 2012. The Trump administration announced a wind down of the program on September 5th, 2017. Congress has considered several pieces of legislation, including the DREAM Act, but no deal yet. Several lawsuits have challenged the Trump administration's efforts to rescind the program. And as of September 2017, there were nearly 700,000 DACA recipients or dreamers. The average age of dreamers was 24 in 2017. And lastly, the program does not currently provide a path to citizenship. So we're going to stop right now because we've actually run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. We hope that you've enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.